over the last 3 years. They just go to the Best Buy, come home with a solar panel designed to hang over the railing of their apartment balcony, plug it into the wall with a standard plug, and producing 20% of the power they use. That's illegal everywhere in the country, except in the state of Utah, where the state legislature, that progressive bastion, enabled it by a unanimous vote earlier this year. I'm betting that within weeks of Mr. Mamdani becoming Mayor Mamdani, we're going to see balcony solar installations sprouting across the five boroughs, and what a nice sign that'll be.
And you gave this, you started Sunday with another renegade mayor, and that is Michelle Wu of Boston, who Trump is trying to take on.
Michelle Wu, Zoran Mamdani, people like this offer a real potential future, and they have an enormous ally in this new technology that really gives us a fresh kind of hope.
Bill McKibben, co-founder of 350.org, founder of the organization Third Act. His new book is just out, Here Comes the Sun, A Last Chance for the Climate and a Fresh Chance for Civilization. He is on book tour. Tonight he'll be in D.C. at Politics and Prose, tomorrow in Houston. And he's organizing a national mobilization for September 21st, the fall equinox, called Sunday 2025, celebrating solar and wind power. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's Loud and Proud. Become a member during our KBOO's Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made, community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service providing help from trained counselors for when stress, worry, and sadness strike. Help is available by calling or texting 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
He said, now I need a man whose heart is cold as ice to test the people's will and goodness when exposed to vice. To be a dictator is his aim. He'll be a man who's failed at everything but scams and theft. In a golden palace he'll reside, of taste and class bereft. He'll convince the poor he serves their needs until they've nothing left. You'll know him by his name. Glory, glory, hallelujah. God is gonna stick it to ya. But you don't realize it, do ya? As your MAGA marches on and on and on and on. Da 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 da. God said he'll be a wicked man to lead with hate and fear, a man corrupt above the law, immune to justice fear, a man demanding violence and then standing in the rear, and Trump shall be his name. He'll sow confusion across the globe and lie with every word. Say evil's good and black is white till all the lines are blurred. Calling those who act up crimes for him the hostages interred. And Trump shall be his name. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Recognize what's coming to ya. Cause Trump will never cease to spew the deception he feeds on.
God said.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. And today we're going to be talking about some comments that Trump made last week, last Friday, saying that he would send troops into our city, into Portland, and wipe out Portland. And so the question today I want to ask listeners is, will Trump send the National Guard to Portland? How likely do you think that is? I understand that, of course, as you know, he has taken over the police force in Washington, D.C. and sent in National Guard there. And of course, he did that. He didn't take over the police, but he did send in the National Guard to Los Angeles, and the courts have ruled against that recently. And I understand that he is sending troops into Chicago, possibly right now, today. And so my question is, how likely is it that Trump will do this again and to attempt, as he said, to wipe us out? I know that he did that in 2020. He did send in troops then. And I just love to hear from listeners, KBU listeners, about what you think and what we could do about it. I mean, what will happen? I understand that, you know, when autocrats use this method to dismantle democracy by sending the military against its own civilians, that this is sort of a there's a period where it's sort of quiet, you know, and then basically they're waiting for a moment when they can get some kind of provoke a response from the population and then use that as an excuse for even more severe methods of occupation and oppression. So and of course, with definitely we know that Trump and his crew, all the Project 2025 folks, have a beady eye on the midterm elections coming up next year, and what will and it does seem pretty apparent that they are making moves to once again suppress the vote, to possibly even invalidate an election that they disagree with the outcome, that cost them power, and so I'd love to hear about that as well. Are these threats against Portland and against other Democratic cities, and he's very clear that this is just for Democratic cities, is this the first step towards, you know, will this actually affect the elections as well upcoming? So I'd love to hear from you all. Once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. And the number here in the studio here in KBOO is 503-231-8187. And just to get you guys up to speed on what has been going on, particularly regarding Trump's comments about potentially sending the National Guard to Portland. So on September 5th, during a press briefing, President Trump suggested that Portland, could be among the next cities to receive National Guard deployment. Yes. So how do you feel about that? So he referred to protests outside the ICE Trump building. That's probably a good name too. I'm coming up with all kinds of things today. And dramatically described Portland as, like, quote, living in hell. And he basically said that federal intervention might be forthcoming. And he also, you know, has made similar statements that he will use the National Guard on other major cities like Chicago, Baltimore, New Orleans, Seattle, San Francisco, and New York. And he's been tying his rationale to, quote unquote, crime, despite data showing overall declines in all those cities. So, as was the case in Washington, D.C., where they've had about a 30% decline. And you know, I think that they claiming that he's claimed that they've arrested 2,000 people in Washington, D.C., since he sent the troops there. And it's unclear whether that's due just to the general decline that was happening already. And also, I understand at midnight tonight, his control over the Washington, D.C. police will end. And so I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And as you know, you may know, the Portland Mayor Keith Wilson has firmly rejected Trump's characterization of the Rose City, stating that Portland does not need federal intervention. He commended local law enforcement for effectively managing expression or for managing what's been going on with ICE protests. I'd love to hear your opinions on that. And Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield has also indicated a readiness to take legal and legislative action to prevent any unauthorized deployment. So, and Oregon lawmakers are preparing proposals that would restrict such federal use of the National Guard. And of course, unlike in Washington, D.C., which it has a rather unusual situation of lacking representation, except for, of course, Congresswoman Elaine Norton, and Trump can has wide latitude to do what he's doing in the city, but in the rest of this country, of course, the National Guard is under the control of the governor, and so I mentioned earlier that that a federal judge recently ruled that Trump's deployment of National Guard and Marines in Los Angeles was illegal under the Posse Comitatus Act, which limits the use of the military in domestic law enforcement. And the hope is that this ruling will actually serve as a legal precedent for other states. I mean, it does, but whether or not it will be effective in stopping what he's doing is still, he seems to just basically get his way and leave it to the courts and lots of lawyers and judges to try to muck it out. But often, you know, his response to these legal judgments really reminds me of President Andrew Jackson. And I was telling a colleague here at the station that that when I was studying Indian federal law, one of the things, the cases we studied, of course, was Jackson's removal, as they call it, of tribes from the Southeast to "quote unquote" Indian territory, now the state of Oklahoma, and how you know Chief Justice John Marshall made a ruling, basically, supporting the tribes' rights to their lands and their national their status as nations, and I think the quote was something along the alleged quote. I don't know if this is actually confirmed, but Jackson allegedly said, "Well, Marshall has his ruling. Let's see him enforce it." Basically, saying that, you know, judges don't have military power to enforce their ruling. There's always just been this sort of gentleman's agreement, if you would call it that, to obey the courts. And certainly Trump has shown that he doesn't do that. He's going to all these sorts of understood respect between the different branches of government, which apparently are not in any kind of legal sense and he's willing to overlook that. So that really does remind me of that. And of course, President Jackson was the one who brought upon the Cherokees and other tribes like the Creek and Muscogee Creek and the forced removal of them from their homelands in the South, in Georgia and Tennessee and other places. And of course, it's famously known as the Trail of Tears, right? And I think that Trump, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he put Andrew Jackson's portrait in the Oval Office in a very prominent place because he feels a great deal of respect for Jackson. And Jackson, of course, was another populist leader in the United States history. And of course, I would say that Trump is his own unique character in world history, but there is a lot of correlation between the two. So as I mentioned, the recent court decision that the federal decision that that Trump's deployment of the National Guard and Marines in LA was illegal, is illegal under the Posse Comitatus Act. We've discussed this act in previous shows, and I'd love to have folks call in and maybe discuss how they think this is applicable now. And of course, legal scholars note that the president's authority to deploy guard forces is significantly more constrained in cities like Portland, unlike Washington, D.C., which has a unique legal status due to constitutional limits unless the governor consents or there is a declared national emergency or rebellion. And he is trying to characterize, of course, dissent against his illegal actions with immigration and rendition of people in the United States from American citizens and unpapered migrants and trying to basically taking them off the streets like what you would see in a third world country or a dictatorship with no due process. And this is astounding. And also with by folks with no don't show any paperwork or anything who they are. Often they are masked with no there's no way to tell if you're being actually kidnapped or. And I think in one case recently, some folks did kidnap people with pretending to be ICE agents because of course ICE agents don't show any proof who they are, and so it's quite terrifying. And he's characterizing protests against this as being as being the problem, not his actual illegal actions. We have a caller. Hello, caller. Hello, Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's definitely likely that he's going to send the National Guard here. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, like you said, he's already done it before, but I think we've seen in places where there's a lot of significant resistance to different things going on in the administration. I mean, Obama did it during the Black Lives Matter protests down in, I think it was Baltimore, they actually filed an injunction against it. Was put forward by Chris Hedges and a few other people, but they actually had to fight that because it was the NDAA, I think is what it was, mm-hmm. and he violated that by sending the National Guard in, and I think it's just because I think it's important to remember that this didn't start with Trump. Trump is probably the most vocal and most buffoonish of the dudes that we've had in office for sure. But like all of the switches and levers that he can pull were manufactured even under Democratic administrations or supposed Democratic anyway. But I think more importantly, I think the biggest thing we can do to prepare ourselves is one thing I think is we need to start talking community defense a la Brown Berets, Black Panthers, and American Indian movement. People should really be looking to learn how, should be able to arm themselves and start learning how to use said arms. I think that would be a really important place to start. But I think fundamentally and much more importantly, we need to start having education that gets us away from the mythologies of America. Mm. Because a lot of the resistance we're hearing is saying, like, well, this isn't America. This isn't us. And it's like, and as you were pointing out, I mean, plenty of cases, especially against indigenous folks, especially against Black people. This is absolutely history echoing or repeating itself once again, because the settler class, white folks have not truly as a group truly learned from the past that was given to them. I was talking yesterday about the fact that we talk about democracy, but what we're not, but we mistake procedural democracy, which is voting and participating in elections, we confuse that with substantive democracy, which is the actual tangible gains. And when you really comes down to it, you know, the you say like the you know, the class struggle is what gave us substantive democracy, and substantive democracy is what expanded and expanded procedural democracy, especially when it comes to black and brown folks, when it comes to women, you know, and other oppressed folks. You know, it was class struggle that gave us the democratic rights that we have, and voting is more of like the symbolic way that we express that, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But the procedures aren't working. They're not working anymore. I mean, we can still vote. We can still supposedly choose people. But those choices in our votes aren't leading us at this point in and of themselves to substantive democracy. And so we need to get it out of our head that voting is the thing that's going to help. It's a piece. But what we really need to get back to is class struggle. You know, we need to get back to ideas of, you know, like revolutionary nationalism, once again, a la Black Panthers, a la Brown Berets, a la, you know, American Indian Movement. I mean, I've heard you talk about it more than once on your shows that, you know, it's not, you know, we need to talk about, like, actual nationalism for oppressed peoples. And it's something that, you know, especially when you discuss it in the context of America, that a lot of, you know, especially a lot of white liberals, and you know, and associated cohorts get really uncomfortable with, because it's actually undermining the system to create dual power, or you know, multiple different points of power, rather than trying to silo it all within one political class, which at this point is, if not feckless, is actually collaborating with the enemy.
Mm. Yes, I think. I think you're right. We need to begin to doing more, you know, we need to be doing more in person and sort of organizing and seeing each other.
Yeah.
You know, and
absolutely. You know, Fred Hampton was amazing at that. You know, people, you know, I don't think people give Fred, I mean, Fred Hampton was only 21, but I mean, he was the dude who, like, you know, who even kind of like came up with the idea of the Rainbow Coalition. But you know, we think of Rainbow Coalition now, we think of people who are just voting in the same direction, you know, because we have some supposed shared interest, where, you know, with his Rainbow Coalition, he was actually getting, you know, he was actually talking, you know, he was actually talking to racist white folks in person and saying, look, you can call me the N-word all you want, and you could hang every single one of us from a tree, but it's not going to change the fact that you're not making a single dollar more, and it hasn't improved your status a single bit. So, you know, rather than fighting against each other, you know, which is absolutely pointless, we got to turn our anger at the actual people who are making our lives hell. Mm-hmm. And it's the same people who at this point are trying to convince us that voting for the next Democrat is going to change the tide. I mean, we saw during the election that Kamala Harris was willing to cozy up to Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney. I mean, Dick Cheney, the butcher of the Middle East, like that was the big
and a profiteer.
And a war profiteer, absolutely. And Kamala Harris saying we need the most lethal military in the world. I mean, there are people out here saying, well, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. But it's like, you got to ask, like, what is the good in that? What is the good in you know, if that's what we're voting for, you know, and then the fact that like everybody who is calling Trump a fascist for the most part during election season is, frankly, nowhere to be found. And if they are to be found, they're saying we need to get in line.
Hmm. Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah, I think it's you know, certainly we've done shows previous years when I was a co-host once a month with Paul and Roland, with I had on a Cleve Benally, who was a Navajo anarchist. He sadly passed away a few years ago. You know, he would discuss the whole voting issue. I mean, I think you know, obviously voting does matter because they're trying to restrict it, right?
Absolutely,
there's an element in which, you know, who is going to be harmed if we allow folks like Trump to be in charge. I mean, look what's happened so far, you know, with the canceling of aid overseas. Millions of children are going to die this year because of it around the world in these countries. And so it's like there is there's a degree of harm involved. I think that that's something that, you know, those of us who aren't going to pay that price need to be, you know, have to take that into the calculations of how we take on these oppressive forces. But
I'm not saying that voting doesn't matter. I mean, it does. But the thing is that voting does not equal substantive democracy. It's class struggle that has given us substantive democracy in every case. And then that substantive democracy has expanded procedural democracy, but now we're in a place where, you know, specifically the liberals are telling us that, you know, we can't fight this, so we need to look forward to the midterms.
Yeah, we can't wait that long.
Exactly. So, you know, we have a bunch of levers and buttons that they're telling us to push, and it's really, at the end of the day, giving us nothing. And so we need to, I'm not saying we need to abandon voting, but we need to engage more in class struggle in a way that will, you know, that if the buttons and levers that we have right now aren't working, then we need to manufacture new ones that do work. And it's not going to come strictly from hanging on to the quote-unquote time-honored traditions and institutions, especially if they're collaborating with the enemy.
Yeah. I think I was thinking of sort of a century ago about the Red Scare in the early 20th century, and you know, leaders like immigrant leaders like Emma Goldman, who were deported, you know, for threatening the status quo, and whose actions really, like you said, created much more substantive democracy for Americans.
Exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
Yeah. So, but I would like to
absolutely.
I do have to offer a correction. It says that President Obama did not send the National Guard into Baltimore. It was actually in 2015. It was Maryland Governor Larry Hogan who activated the state's National Guard, which is how it legally is set up. And of course, following the unrest, the protests following the death of Freddie Gray, and he did so at the request of the Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. President Obama was briefed, he did respond and publicly condemned the violence in Baltimore, but also acknowledged the underlying issues of police violence against African Americans, calling it a slow rolling crisis. So yeah, it's a little bit. I think the use of the National Guard to quell protest is a well documented phenomenon, and Trump isn't the first to do it. So that is very true.
Anyway, I don't want to keep you too long, but I think that we need to get to a place where we, you know, where especially when it comes to black and brown folks, I think we really need to start to begin to really look at like how we're going to fight against this administration, and in a way that is going to actually improve our status, even if it means we have to break the break away from in some ways from the system that we have, because, you know, every oppressed person has paid the price, you know, dealing with America, but I think especially when it comes to indigenous people and black people, like, you know, we have to stop pretending that, you know, that even in the best of times, this country means us no good. And we have to, and, you know, and especially now when the same people who are telling us to play by the rules they're not helping. It's like, you know, we have to be, I'm a firm believer in a revolutionary nationalism, because, I mean, it's the, you know, because they've stopped us short of, you know, like they want us to, they're fine with us when we're, they're fine with us when we're complicit in empire. But the second we want to make something for ourselves, that's when they want to stomp us out. When we want to have something for ourselves that has nothing to do with empire, that's when they want to stomp us out.
Yeah, we have to be quite proactive about making the country that we want to be. Do you mean real? And we can't leave it to the system to make it happen. I think that's true. We have another caller. Thank you, Santiago. Mm-hmm. Good to talk to you. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I just wanted to say I do agree with everything that was just said, that we do need a total overhaul of our government. But the threat of troops coming in is right now. And so where I have seen possible power is in the different states that have been threatened, forming alliances and working together. I mean, even with like the West Coast Health Alliance that's happened, that is right now with Washington, California, and Oregon and Hawaii, saying, hey, we don't like what's happening with the federal government, so we're going to do it ourselves. And so working together, and I just wonder, I like what Chicago is doing in terms of resistance so far. I'd like to see what LA has done, and you know what DC tried as much as they could. Could we all get together and come up with, you know, a reunited front? That would make, I think that would be power, and that's what we need. And we need to respond to this, not as like individual victims being attacked, but as a united front of people saying no. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to put that out. I don't know if anybody knows any more about that, or what's happening
in Chicago,
but I would love to see it.
Yeah, I see that. That's a great point. I see Jacobin has an article out today about Chicago versus Trump's takeover, and that how Chicago is attempting to model resistance to Donald Trump's looming authoritarian military occupation of its streets. So, and of course, yeah, they are definitely contrasting.
I think that it would be great to follow their example, or at least hook like Portland. The question that you had, how we should respond. I think we should be forming, I don't want to say alliances because that sounds like war, but I want to say forming a cooperation or some sort of exchange with other cities that are going through this. And yes, we have a united front of how we're going to stand up against this. So it would be interesting to see what Chicago does, but it's not theoretical, or like people are going to get hurt. So it's not just a theoretical question. I hope that we can all be strong.
Yes. Yeah, I see that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson signed a Protecting Chicago executive order, and it's a sweeping executive order that directs city departments and agencies to protect the rights of Chicagoans in response to credible threats of imminent federal law enforcement or military actions. This was signed on August 30th. And it's extraordinary that our cities are trying to figure out how to protect themselves from the federal government. It's astounding.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I never thought we'd be, but hopefully we can stick together. And there's a lot of strength in that. Well, there is, in my opinion, the only strength in that. So, yeah.
I think your idea is really good about us talking to each other more, these different cities, and begin to strategize together. And yeah, I think alliances like you, the health alliance that you mentioned, are crucial, you know. And I'm really glad that West Coast states are forming alliance in response to CDC's changes under RFK Jr. And certainly that will save lives. I mean, the thing what they're doing is actually harming and people and putting us all at risk, right? Especially the most vulnerable members of our population, you know, the
and
elderly.
Certainly adding fear and confusion to everything, which is his biggest weapon.
I think that's an excellent point. I think I definitely want to do a show on the whole CDC thing, because it's, you know, right now I'm hearing that the state of Oregon usually follows federal guidelines, and with these present guidelines, all we're able to get is a prescription for elderly family members to get a booster shot, but everyone else, you know, is sort of left out, you know.
Yeah.
So it's quite concerning. Yeah. So but the thank you. I'd like to also read a little bit from the Chicago mayor's Mayor Brandon Johnson's executive order. And he says, the city of Chicago will do everything in our power to defend our democracy and protect our communities. With this executive order, we send a resounding message to the federal government. We do not need nor want an unconstitutional and illegal military occupation of our city. So he's calling it a military occupation. We will take any action necessary to protect the rights of Chicagoans. Protecting Chicago is the next step in the work we have been doing to defend our city from federal overreach and illegal action. And of course, there are, yesterday there were protests going on in the street against this these proposed ICE raids, and so it's happening. You know, I know that here in Portland we did have a No Kings protest, but definitely there should be more coming. And yeah, they blocked traffic in downtown Chicago after ICE arrests were made. In Lawndale, I guess an area of Chicago, as part of Operation Midway Blitz. So these horrible little names for these illegal actions. And so that happened on Tuesday evening. They blocked traffic for hours in downtown Chicago. So, I think what's going on here now with Oregon leaders, you know, are preparing court and legislative actions after Trump. I'm actually reading a headline from the Oregon Capitol Chronicle. Oregon leaders prepare court legislative action after Trump floats National Guard in Portland. So the state attorney general points to case of California deployment being blocked by a federal judge, which I mentioned earlier. This was reported yesterday. Oregon leaders say they are prepared to litigate and legislate against President Donald Trump's potential mobilization of the National Guard in Portland following his comments last week vowing to, quote, clean up the state's largest city and, quote, wipe out protesters. Yes, he used that term, wipe out. President Donald Trump, during a media briefing with reporters on Friday, said he would send National Guard troops to another city. However, while he declined to specify, he later mentioned Portland as a possibility, making it appears that he was referencing a Fox News report with a resident complaining of violence and noise associated with protests against Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But the footage included with that coverage was from 2020, when federal agents who had stormed the city under Trump's orders during the 2020 racial justice protests pepper sprayed an individual. So, and of course, he is focusing on Democratic-led states, characterizing them as havens of violent crime, despite data showing that crime has decreased substantially, as high as 30% in many of these cities and communities, and actually is much, much higher in red states, of course, Louisiana being a notable one. And so it's definitely a focus. It's a politically motivated focus and a craven use of the threat of crime, which is so often used by Republicans, going all the way back to, I think I can recall, George Bush Sr. with the whole Willie Horton ads, just, you know, getting white, mostly white Americans afraid and giving that them license to do things like what Trump is doing now. So Attorney General, as I mentioned earlier, Dan Rayfield said in a statement he was coordinating with Governor Tina Kotek and various state attorneys general with the promise of taking Trump to court when he oversteps his authority. His office has been preparing for the scenario of National Guard deployment since Trump took office in January, he said. So they've been preparing for this from when he first got inaugurated for his second term in office. And he says, Rayfield says, what happened in California is proof, he said. A federal judge ruled that President Trump's deployment of thousands of National Guard troops and Marines in Los Angeles was illegal, blocking the use of military force as domestic law enforcement and permanently banning similar deployments in the future. They note, though, that the ruling was limited to California, so it doesn't apply to actually other states. And Trump could experiment with other possibilities that do not involve commanding the state's National Guard, which operates under dual control of federal and state government. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said last Tuesday that Trump was planning to use the Texas National Guard to mobilize troops in Chicago. Wow. I know that their southern governors have been sending their troops to D.C. to to compliment the troops that Trump has deployed there, and which the president has targeted, Chicago, which the president has targeted for crime enforcement as recently as this past weekend, and again this past Friday. So Texas Governor Greg Abbott has denied those allegations, so he's denying that he's planning on sending National Guard troops to Chicago, but said he is willing to do so if Trump requests it. So all Trump has to do is ask. So once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are discussing Trump's threats on Friday to wipe out protesters in Portland by sending, troops into our city. And this is some of the responses of Oregon leaders to this threat. So Jenny Hansen, a spokesperson for the Oregon Department of Justice, said the agency can't really get into some of the specifics when asked about its legal plans, but the issue has already been on the radar of Oregon's federal lawmakers. Oregon U.S. Representative Suzanne Domenici and Democratic U.S. Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden in July reintroduced legislation from 2020 in Congress seeking to prevent deployment of federal law enforcement unless requested by a governor and mayor. So once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I do encourage you to call in. Do you think that Trump is going to deploy the National Guard in Portland? He's already done it in Washington, D.C., obviously. And what does that mean for our own safety and for our democracy? I think this is obviously politically motivated. They're going after Democratic cities. Portland has become a punching bag on Fox News and other conservative shows to attack our progressive outlook and policies. And really, there's been a war on even really caring about other people. I think there's this notion, I think, that Vice President Vance has pushed, a newly minted Catholic, that having sympathy or empathy is wrong. It's unchristian, which is, was, of course, the former late Pope Francis had corrected him on that. Once again, you can call in here to Wednesday Talk Radio at 503-231-8187. And we're discussing Trump's threat to occupy Portland again militarily and to wipe out protests, particularly against ICE immigration, very heavy-handed and illegal immigration enforcement and of folks working in this country and providing vital services for all of us. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hey, Jacqueline.
Yeah, hi.
I find talking about what Trump may or may not do a lot like, and I'm going to parody an old expression, but it's a lady's prerogative to change his, her, mine. It's rather fruitless, I think, to discuss something that could be completely different tomorrow or another threat tomorrow. You know, he just keeps pumping out these threats. I want to suggest, you haven't mentioned the KBOO drive, but Lisa Loving said something in a humorous way that I think we should take seriously. She suggested sending Trump an honorary membership in KBOO.
Oh, I like that. That's a really great idea.
I'm going to double my donation. And ask them, I think many of us that can afford to, I would love to have a little bit of revenge or avenge. That certainly won't change much, but maybe just piss him off, ruin his day. I don't know if that's possible.
No, I like that idea. Yeah. Well, I think that is part of the sort of psychic trauma that he brings to all of us and the world in general, actually, not just Americans. But he always, you just don't know what he's going to do. And, of course,
well, I'm getting a glimpse, because this is what I hear on the news, like Trump's threatened, and then he walked back. But that was not a walk back. That was part of the script. Uh-huh. His thing is to put out something really wild and then go back halfway. But even halfway, what it was wild, okay? Unacceptable.
Yeah, I think the Trump taco thing, Trump always, backs down. And so, I think that's definitely a case. But I think in this case, he's actually gone through with it. I mean, you see him doing that in D.C., in Los Angeles, and Chicago. I think there's a very, and right now he's desperate to basically, you know, his talent is controlling the news, what we're hearing, and to, as they call it, flood the zone even with a lot of policy actions.
Well, he invented fake news, and he's a modern day purveyor of.
Yes, yeah, I think, but I think in this case there's very strong, you know, I think this is going to happen, honestly, and the question is. You know, a lot of times our only, it seems like the only response is a legal response, but the courts are quite slow, which
exactly.
They should be because they have to consider things. But also, once again, how does it get enforced, right? Especially if Trump just decides to ignore everything.
Yeah, I hear a lot about the rule of law, and then I want to add enforcement. We've heard a lot about law enforcement and rule of law. Could we put them together and have a role model, rule of law enforcement?
Yeah, I think it's, the kind of enforcement he's doing is more at his own whim and in order to try to play to his base constantly. I mean, I know that there's some, folks saying that he's trying to make sure that people don't pay attention to the Jeffrey Epstein connection.
Yeah,
and so he's playing any song he can, desperately tap dancing away to try to make sure we don't notice. And his base.
He's egregious, and he's an egregious example. But look at what happened with Qatar yesterday, and all these leaders in Europe and strongly condemn this, and what else? Those are words. So he's just. I'm saying just. Excuse me. I don't like doing that when he's not just. He's simply. the most egregious example of what Santiago is pointing out, that they talk, and then we get, you know, another war. And the newspapers are complicit. They do this. They sell newspapers when there's war a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go walk my dog. And
good to hear from you.
To you and all in Portland.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So, I do think that, I think that there is a good chance that he will be doing this. I guess I'm asking you all, you know, what response can we have to this when it happens, right? Oh, we have another caller. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday. Hi, you're on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Thank you. What can we do about it? I think we can look at it kind of from four prongs. Expect and be prepared for the worst case scenario with all the different strategic solutions for that. Two, build for the future that we want by being the change you want. Three, making the gracious, wise, tactical, short-term decisions you have to make. And four, have that bigger spiritual and interpersonal, being the answer we want. So one of the things that I think he's going to come here, we already had the commanders of the local National Guard really pissed because they had already told him on short notice they're going to be here, and they were not, and they're demanding all these resources and time and everything, and interfering with their projects they had to be doing, and they're not giving the information they needed. So they already did come, whether they were deployed for wildfire or something else, they did come, and more are expected. So one of the things he called Portland, a hell hole. So I would like us to all, if they're amateur cell phones or social media and our professional standards, our local governments and businesses, all work independently and collaboratively to make incredible videos online of how beautiful and wonderful and peaceful and enjoyable and idealistic Portland has human beings, and they're messed up, and they do things I don't like. But let's show us having our picnics and having our festivals and going to school and volunteering and these beautiful gardens and these beautiful works of art and public art and all these good things that not just what Chamber of Commerce would say, but, you know, people to people, talking on their porches or sidewalks, helping each other out, conversations, you know, showing the mutual aid, showing the care, showing the intelligent problem solving, and showing how beautiful and incredible Portland is. And we don't need to show how horrible some things are while we work on changing those. And let's just flood the zone with what a haven versus hellhole Portland is, and to show, in a way, the ridiculousness. Show how crime has gone down and what we've done interpersonally with our painted sidewalks and our mutual aid and our parks department and our checking on our neighbors and all the different things we do to prevent crime, reduce crime, help crime victims recover, and perpetrators change their ways. We have a lot to celebrate and to support and uphold so that we can show the ridiculousness of the false claims. And then whatever violence and crime is here, show that it's from police, not from the people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. I mean, I think taking back the narrative is a big part of it. They've spent, you know, especially Fox News has spent a lot of time denigrating Portland and everything that Portland stands for. And I think it does begin to take on a life of its own, those ideas, and completely disassociated from reality. And I think showing that reality, you know, how we live together, why these things matter, why they work, is crucial. I think I might do a show trying to show that, because I would like to feature folks in Portland who are communicating that message to the public, whether it's via social media or other means, because I think it's very important that we begin to promote that and to counter these lies, which then embolden actions which are very violent and you know, and a waste of resources and just creates more trauma.
I don't know if part of this same Portland haven, whatever I want to use. But I don't know if it's appropriate this time too, mm-hmm. but certainly for our listeners, that because of a 30-year study that the FBI and I don't know, two other federal agencies studied the size of then smaller Portland and every city in the United States that size and larger, to see how well they would handle catastrophes and martial law. Mm. Portland was number one by a huge margin over second place. And that was because of KABU. And that was because people were talking about caring and proactive problem solving and collaboration and creativity. If we show that in October 2007, TAPA 4 was organized by the federal government to cut off the top four roles and governments, the state, regional, county, and city, so they could take over in martial law. And a few people kind of watching where the military is spending their money and time and planning on things, watching who was trying to manipulate the Mexican and Canadian governments in the Three Amigos conference. By saying, hey, if we do this to Portland, we can do this to you, so you have to concede to our demands. It was Portlanders who creatively said, okay, you want volunteers to play for just a drill? We'll help you. And at the same time, spying and preventing the destruction of the Portland metro area, permanently destroying it, making it inhabitable. So we have a government that has already proven in two very expensive multi-year campaigns that they already know Portland has more potential and that it was to be considered one of the best climate refugee sites over 30 years ago. it was considered, this is where people, if we don't have the earthquakes, this is where people are going to go. So if the federal government is already saying, this is pretty good, and if he likes whites and racism, well, hey, this is an all-white, very racist community. So, but we can show both what's beautiful and good and not criminal and not violent, how we prevent and correct crime, and the crimes that are committed or the crimes that are planned, premeditated, they're from the federal government and our local police.
That's a great, great point. Great idea. Yeah, I totally agree. I think, wow. Yeah, I think I want to probably focus more on promoting those resources and those actions that have been done in the past that have been effective in challenging and you know, I mean, basically, this is effectively facing martial law in our own city, you know, and for no other reason that, you know, we dare to be inclusive. We dare to envision an America, a world where people are, you know, don't have to live in fear or exclusion and all the, you know, I mean, I think of all the money and resources being spent on Trump's, you know, his hissy fit, basically, you know, I mean, you know, and yet, yet a majority of, I'd have to say a certain sector of America, which, it has a certain, you know, privileged experience in American history, votes for him. And I think there's a hard about 39% who support him no matter what, because they see this change as being, you know, worth it all, right? What's happening. And
I think the strategies that we use have to address different audiences. Mm-hmm. One, the strategy I said of promoting Portland is to kind of counter our fear and our helplessness and activate our agency. And a little bit of the media, a little bit of other folks who can say, hey, now this is ridiculous. Second is protecting us, because we are racist. We are unfair. We are classist. You know, we gotta clean up our act. Third, we can have, like Hanoi Rose, we can have the communication to the National Guard as, hey, is this really what you want to do? Hmm. Is this how you want to be known? Is this want to be associated with us? And I'll totally different audience are the ICE employees or whomever they are. They have a totally different mentality, values, approach, and motivation. And let's go after that and show that, you know, they're ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's
but not in such
audience.
A way that they take it out and retaliate from their anger on these, you know, white privileged guys that are having temper tantrums with them. And then they take it out on black and brown prisoners. Mm-hmm. So let's be strategic in what our audiences are and how to go about it. There is something we can do in the short term for this threat that I think is very real.
Mm-hmm. I like that approach, because it uses things that are values that we believe make the world better. You know, discourse, reaching out to other people as human beings. And certainly I heard reports that National Guard in Los Angeles that were deployed were traumatized by what they had to do, you know, and actually did, file complaints, right? Formal complaints. And so that is something that I think would be a really good audience to discuss. And I believe that, you know, all the huge attempt to recruit new ICE immigration enforcement officers has been very slow. It has not been easy to even with these. I think ICE, I heard that ICE has a larger budget now than the Marines. with the new bill, that the Big Beautiful Bill funding, it's has an immense budget for hiring. And yeah, it'd be good to do outreach there as well. I think that's a fantastic idea. So thank you so much, Eve. And do you have anything else to add?
Everybody, let's pitch in and support KBOO. I would like us to reduce its cost by having solar panels, et cetera, having more transformers. And we need to have KBOO for east of the Cascades, more of a connection to the folks there, because they're really going to be screwed so horribly.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much. That's
okay,
excellent.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. So before we, we're almost at the end of the show, but the hour, but I definitely want to draw your attention as well to a New York Times, I think it's the Daily podcast, and a couple days ago they came out with an episode called When the National Guard Comes to Town, and this is looking at a month after President Trump's federal takeover of Washington, D.C., and how the city's residents say that their lives have changed. And so that's a really interesting discussion. They also talked to a professor who is looking at, who studies sort of these sorts of takeovers, and definitely listen to his comments and what they do, some great interviews on the ground with how it's impacting people and the fear that people are living with. That's, you know, really, I think that's the great tragedy, is just the way in which so many other folks living here in the United States, whatever their status, are living in fear. They're afraid to go to the store. They're afraid to go shopping. They're afraid to seek medical care. It's you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of deaths and stuff associated even with just that, people unable to do things they need to do to conduct their life. And it's just, you know, pretty scary. But yeah, the... you know, this is the professor they interviewed, you know, said that this sort of thing, bringing, you know, military into, you know, occupying your own country, is the first step that authoritarians use. And so it's nothing small what he's doing. It's out of a playbook. It works to dismantle democracy. And it's a serious thing. And I do urge all of you to do what you can, you know, and to, as many of our listeners are had said on today, to connect with each other and to begin messaging other stories that we need to be heard about Portland and how we live our lives here. Thank you so much. This has been Jacqueline Keeler, Wednesday Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in